אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
The Albanese government says recognizing Palestinian statehood is a step towards a genuine two-state solution, one that acknowledges the aspirations of the Palestinian people, whilst making clear there can be no place for Hamas in any future Palestinian government. But the move has divided opinion at home and abroad. And to get a reaction from a community leader, we spoke to Jeremy Liebler, who's the president of the Zionist Federation of Australia, and this is what he had to say. The Albanese government says recognizing Palestinian statehood is a step towards a genuine two-state solution, one that acknowledges the aspirations of the Palestinian people, whilst making clear there can be no place for Hamas in any future Palestinian government. But the move has divided opinion at home and abroad. And to get a reaction from a community leader, we spoke to Jeremy Liebler, who's the president of the Zionist Federation of Australia, and this is what he had to say. So I spoke to you briefly in the beginning of the week after Anthony Albanese and Penny Wong made a public statement that Australia would be recognising Palestinian statehood at the upcoming UN General Assembly in September. Can you tell us, please, what your reaction is to this?
Well, I think, you know, disappointment would be, you know, the overriding emotion and feeling at the moment. The reality is that, you know, many people in the Jewish community, certainly the position of the Zionist Federation, in my own view, is that I'm a supporter of a two-state solution. I think that is ultimately in the interests of both Israelis and Palestinians. But when that happens and how that happens really matters. And, you know, until last week, the Australian government's position was, you know, that they'd set out fairly clearly preconditions that were necessary for Australia to even consider unilateral recognition. And that included very common sense ideas like Hamas needs to be removed from power, the hostages being held by Hamas needs to be released, there needs to be significant reform of the Palestinian Authority. And they have effectively shifted their position now to recognise a Palestinian state on the back of commitments for these things to happen. And that is a very different position to preconditions because, of course, there is no reasonable basis for anyone to believe that these commitments will be fulfilled. Even if there is a genuine good faith desire to fulfill them, you know, there is a serious question as to whether or not the Palestinian Authority have the capacity to implement them.
So you think that Australia is putting the cart before the horse, essentially?
Yes. I mean, you know, the best analogy I can give is that, you know, an aeroplane being given clearance to fly on the back of commitments that the necessary maintenance to make it safe will take place sometime in the future. No one would get onto the plane in those circumstances. And in this case, you know, you're effectively setting up that state for failure by recognising them when they have none of the basic infrastructure to operate as a state. What are the borders of this state? Who are the leaders of this state? There is no democratic processes or institutions. There's no free press. There's no independent judiciary. There are no elections. You know, Mahmoud Abbas is in his 21st year of a four-year term. There is massive, widespread corruption within the Palestinian Authority. These aren't opinions. These are things that even Australia would have to agree with. They would agree with, but yet they're prepared to take the Palestinian Authority on their word that these things will be resolved over time. And I think that is a very real error of judgment.
So what does it actually materially mean for the status quo with Australia throwing their weight behind Palestinian statehood amongst so many other countries? Will it behoove Israel to change any course, or does it actually mean any change on the ground in Gaza at all? Because if anything, it seems like Benjamin Netanyahu's administration's doubling down on the military offensive now by expanding its reach into Gaza City.
Well, I don't think Australia's view on this subject will have a huge impact. It's sort of not really the main point here because, you know, the truth is, maybe not just Australia, but if you've got UK, France, Canada, you know, Israel is under enormous international pressure on many fronts. But if Australia's motivation is to proceed with unilateral recognition sooner than they had anticipated because of the humanitarian suffering going on in Gaza, well, there is no world where this symbolic recognition is going to help Palestinians who are suffering from, you know, hunger or from the consequences of the war on the ground in Gaza. I don't see how anyone could coherently or honestly suggest that that would be the case. So what is the purpose of this? Is this being used as a tool to punish Israel for perceived misconduct or mishandling of the war. If that's the case, I don't think recognising a state is the appropriate vehicle to punish Israel for whatever, you know, that Australia's perceived concerns are.
The Australian Prime Minister received praise recently from Hamas, and I quote, "an important step towards achieving justice for our people and securing their legitimate rights." Do you think a public declaration by Hamas is beneficial for the Australian government to hear?
Clearly not. Clearly not. But, you know, none of that surprises me. It's clear that Hamas and other, you know, extremist groups will be watching this very closely and will say, well, yes, notwithstanding that there's been a lot of destruction in Gaza, ultimately this is something that would not have otherwise happened were it not for the 7th of October attacks. Mm. I also don't think that, you know, one should judge the Australian government's decision based on what Hamas says or doesn't say. Hamas is a terrorist organisation. I didn't need Hamas to tell us that, you know, effectively this would be seen as a reward for terrorism and be completely counterproductive.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it would debase the Australian government's decision in any way.
I think that it certainly, you know, it's not a very good look. And, you know, the Australian government would not enjoy the prospect of being, you know, thanked by Hamas. But I think more importantly, you know, there was a very important interview on ABC last night with Sarah Ferguson and the American ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee. And he was highly critical of the Australian government's decision. I think that's a far more relevant consideration for the Australian government and Australian people. One needs to ask themselves is, you know, what damage has been done? He described the decision as disgust. In response to a question, he said that, you know, within the White House, there was disgust at Australia's decision to recognise Palestine. He also, you know, described it as a gift to Hamas. And so I think that's far more than Hamas's reaction to have, you know, Australia's closest ally, the United States, respond with disgust to a decision by the Australian government that is entirely symbolic, that is going to have no practical impact on the ground, but may well have practical impact on Australia's interests vis-a-vis AUKUS, tariffs, and the rest with the United States, not to mention Australia's standing and how we are perceived, is a far more relevant issue.
So just bring it back to the US. What actually happens when they reject this decision at the UN and then you've got over 100 countries who support it? Does that do anything or is it a symbolic gesture?
Each country will decide, right? All of these countries are sovereign countries. Australia's a sovereign country. It doesn't need the United States to agree with or sign off on a decision to recognise a Palestinian state. So, I mean, yes, it's symbolic as between what happens on the ground over there. But, you know, it could mean things like an upgrading of a Palestinian embassy here in Australia and a full ambassador rather than just sort of a representative. You know, it begs the question, what does it look like on the ground over there? Is there going to be a Palestinian, an Australian embassy on the ground in Ramallah? Is it going to be in East Jerusalem?
What might actually happen if this all does go ahead? What does a Palestinian state look like and why is that so bad for Israel?
It's not a question of why it is bad for Israel because this nothing is actually going to change on the ground. It's bad, I think, for the entire region and for the prospect of peace and, in fact, for Palestinians because ultimately you are giving a prize following the worst terrorist attack that's ever taken place on Jews since the Holocaust. And you are delivering a win to Palestinians when they have not had to actually give up anything in return. And so the basic principle that, you know, there'll only be peace in the Middle East when both sides of the party are prepared to sit down and reach a deal, it undermines that prospect. And what it does is embolden Palestinian transients. I mean, the practical reality is that Israel has offered Palestinians a state on four or five occasions, and on each time, it was rejected. Camp David in 2000, Barak offered Palestinians 97% of the West Bank plus land swaps for the remaining 3%, a capital in East Jerusalem, shared sovereignty of parts of East Jerusalem and the Old City, and it was rejected. And so we're now sending a message that you don't need to come to the table. You don't need to compromise. You don't need to reform. You can continue to oppress your own people. You can continue to build tunnels instead of building schools. You don't need to have democratic elections. I mean, this is basically the Western world sentencing Palestinians to continue being oppressed by their own corrupt leaders.
So is it naive to say it's Israel's problem if they have their own state and they choose to control it in an authoritarian way?
There are many corrupt regimes, and there are many, there are countries that Australia recognises that are now have parts of the country controlled by proscribed terrorist organisations. That's true. But as far as I know, there's no precedent of Australia ever recognising a country while it was controlled by terrorist organisations. So, yes, you know, Australia recognises Afghanistan, but it didn't recognise Afghanistan when it was actually controlled by the Taliban. It did so prior to that. And so, I think what we are doing is the West is effectively creating expectations on the part of the Palestinians for something that they will receive something without having to give anything in return. And that is not
like
ultimately going to contribute. Well, it's also not going to contribute towards a peaceful resolution of the conflict, because the signal they're sending the Palestinians is you do not have to come to the table, you do not have to compromise. We are going to give this to you. And you don't have to give anything in return. So why would they?
We know that Australia's goal is to exclude Hamas from the negotiations, but then you've got people like Jonathan Conricus, former IDF spokesperson and senior fellow for the Defence of Democracies, saying that, and I quote, Australia is naive and a prize to Hamas, as you just said before as well. Do you believe that this latest decision by the Australian government has given another boost to Hamas's international diplomacy?
I think we know this to be true, because we've just seen what's happened. The reality is, Israel agreed to a ceasefire. Hamas rejected the ceasefire after all of these calls for recognition from France had begun. You know, frankly, I'm not sure that Australia actually wanted or planned to do this. I mean, the fact that as recently as 2 or 3 weeks ago, the Prime Minister was emphatically saying that recognition is not imminent because the preconditions have not been satisfied, and then shifted the position after the France and the UK decided to go ahead with recognition, says to me that, this was more a case of Australia not wanting to be left behind alone without, having others around them.
Sounds a bit like a PR campaign, the way you're describing it.
Well, I think it's also about Australia not wanting to be left alone on an issue where, they actually acknowledge that they can't have a huge impact or resolve this issue themselves directly. They are on the periphery.
I just wanted to ask you also if you think, Jeremy, that Israel's paying the price for overreach in Gaza when they withdrew aid in March, and that led to scenes of suffering that people around the world just couldn't fathom. Do you think this is a public affairs meltdown from Israel, or a foreign policy communications meltdown, or as we call Hasbara?
There is absolutely no question. I don't think it's a question of Hasbara. I think, Israel, part of this is a reaction to the highly irresponsible and extreme statements that are coming out of parts of the Israeli government, the far-right aspects that have said things like, we should make Gaza Jewish and we should resettle Gaza. All of these, none of these things, by the way, are going to happen. And no Israeli government would implement any of these things, in my view. But the failure of, the Israeli government to call this stuff out, often because of their own local political audience, has definitely, in my view, contributed to the international pressure that's being applied.
Mm. And if there are Palestinian elections held, say, in a year or two, will Hamas be campaigning on outcomes like these? Their administration just seems to be more effective at campaigning than Mahmoud Abbas's Palestinian Authority.
Well, Australia has said, to its credit, that Hamas can play no role in these elections. But we also know that, the polling in the West Bank actually has Hamas is a lot more popular than they are in Gaza, because, of course, Gazans are experiencing the price of Hamas. But really, the notion of elections taking place in a year is ridiculous. Elections in an environment where you don't have a free press, you don't have freedom of expression, where there's no independent judiciary, where there is mass corruption, are meaningless. Democracy is not simply voting in an election. You can't have a free and fair election if you don't have the right of freedom of expression.
But do you think that's a projection coming from a person living in a democracy?
No, I just think it's the basic definition of democracy. Iran had elections, right? 98% voted in favour of, the regime. Now, of course, they're not free and fair elections, and you'd probably be arrested if you did anything but vote for who you were instructed to vote for. But, so in the case of the Palestinian, in the PA, you're going to have one or two options. Either Hamas is going to participate either directly or indirectly, in which case they would win, or there'll be suppression and it will be a fake election, in which case the Palestinian Authority will not actually have any, you know, agency, authority or legitimacy. And that's, you know, ultimately why. Look, it's been 20 years since the disengagement from Gaza. Natan Sharansky was in the cabinet at the time. And he actually walked out of the cabinet in protest of the disengagement, not because he didn't believe that we should separate from the Palestinians and they should have some form of autonomy, but because he was someone that had spent 9 years in a Russian gulag, and he understood what it means to live under a dictatorship. And he felt that by Israel disengaging and leaving Gaza to Hamas or the PA, just another dictatorship, that ultimately we would be sentencing Palestinians to continue to be oppressed by their own leaders. And the basis of his theory was that in order to negotiate peace, you need to negotiate peace with a democracy, because then they actually represent the will of the people. Otherwise, you're just negotiating with another oppressor. And until that oppressor is replaced with the next oppressor. And I think, you know, his judgment and his view on these things turned out to be right.
But then it just seems like this war is going to be playing out in perpetuity.
I think quite the opposite. Had the Australian government, UK, France and Canada and all Western countries maintained that they support a two-state solution, but they said, here are the conditions, and conditions need to be satisfied before we recognise. So they could have, and provided the financial support and everything, you know, that the Palestinians need in order to implement it, but they could have said, okay, if you want recognition, you want your own state, show us that you're capable of running a state, denounce violence. And here's all the support we'll give you, both financial and pragmatic and practical, and here are the steps you need to take in order to start becoming a democracy. We need a free speech, a free press. We need to have an independent judiciary. You need to allow criticism. Mm. And then you can, you know, that you create the stepping stones, and then you can have a democratic process. This is no different to after World War II, where there was a whole denazification process. They had to re-educate the population who had been, you know, taken by the propaganda of Goebbels. And there's no difference. You've got an entire generation of Palestinians who have been, you know, under the spell of Hamas propaganda.
Jeremy Liebler, thank you so much for joining us here on SBS Hebrew.
Thanks for having me.
רוצים לשמוע עוד סיפורים? האזינו דרך האפל פודקאסט, גוגל פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי, או בכל מקום אחר בו ניתן להזין לפודקאסטים.